Yeah, good morning. Happy Monday to you. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. I'm Reginald Atatula alongside Luke Morrow for this Monday. John Lopez got the day off. Figgy Fig still rocking with you. And you, obviously, hanging out with us and getting involved with the program as you know how to. 713-572-4610 is the number to text. And, of course, we appreciate the MoCaram Injury Lawyers for the live streams. Both on the YouTube page, Sports Radio 610, and on Twitch, 610 Houston. Luke, what's happening, man?
Oh, not much. Good to be here. I mean, tough weekend for the Astros, but obviously gearing up for the Texans. Always a great time to hang out with you guys and talk Houston sports.
Yeah, let's talk about all of it over the course of the next 4 hours. We got you till 2. In the course of that, we'll do a lot of things that we need to do during this time, including we'll hear from D'Amico Ryans off of the practice field when it comes to what's happening out there in West Virginia. You know, we still want to keep tied into the Houston Texans as we're gearing up for preseason game number one this weekend when they'll catch the Vikings in Minnesota. So still very much going to be tied into what's happening out there. In fact, there's a couple of things already happening that have caught my attention this morning. So we'll talk about that, but we'll also get a chance to chat with Sean Pendergast, courtesy of Fly by Yuengling at 12:40 to get his thoughts from practice today. Because we are still on the ground, boots on the ground, giving you coverage of your Houston Texans.
I got my boots on the ground.
You would know Boot Man, wouldn't you?
I was thinking about that song, Where Them Fans At.
Oh, yes. That has been a nice viral sensation. Actually, is it still viral considered? Like, it's been a little bit of a time.
Yeah, I think it's normal now. I might have to play that song when Sean hop on since he actually got the boots on the ground.
Look. I think the thing about Sean is that he enjoys, like, he is a fan of wrestling. I'm certain that that was a good part of his weekend, watching SummerSlam, I believe, is the wrestling event.
Oh, yeah.
That was this weekend.
Big weekend.
And I think that, yeah, he will be very much tapped into the idea of having a certain level of walkout music in that space.
That's right.
Let's talk a little bit, though, about your Houston Texans. All right, like I mentioned, out there working out in West Virginia already in practice, and a couple of notable things that the various reporters are already getting into. Damian Pierce and Christian Harris, neither of them have been practicing. Damian Pierce has been on the physically unable to perform list. He remains there. And Christian Harris has not been on the physically unable to perform list, but he also remains out of the, you know, out of the practice. They're working over to the side, though, which maybe does portend some level of return to play, hopefully sooner rather than later. Which of those for you, Luke, is the bigger deal, not being out here practicing, especially at this juncture where we get out to the cool temperatures in West Virginia?
Yeah, interesting. By the way, on the cool temperatures, they were talking about it was 62 degrees there in West Virginia. I mean, it's still August. That, I think, is too much. It's too hot here. I lost power this morning at 4 a.m. because I assume, like, rolling blackouts. I don't know. It happened over the weekend, too, not at my place, but a few other places around. I tried to go to lunch. The place was closed. They didn't have power. So it's too hot here in Houston. I think 62 is too cold in West Virginia. There's some sort of happy medium that I would prefer for August. But that's besides the point. To answer your question.
Ask Luke already. I love it.
I'm just saying. 62? It's still August. What are we doing?
62 is overrated.
Yeah. In August.
That's not football enough.
No.
We need to hit a nice 73 degrees in order to get football weather for real.
That's good weather right there. I need a little more than 62 when it's August 4th still. Next month, October, 62 is nice. To answer your question, I think Damian Pierce, because Christian Harris to me is just so, I don't know, confusing. It's almost like, this is probably a bad comparison, but it's almost like, was Al Capone's vault when there was all this buildup and then they opened the vault, there was nothing in there, and it was like a mystery of like, what? There was so much anticipation that they thought all this stuff was in the vault that wasn't in there. And for Harris, trying to figure out now going back almost 12 months of what's going on with this guy, and he made that return last year and then, you know, wasn't much of a return, and now who knows. But Pierce for me, because I'm still intrigued by the running back position. It was one of my questions going into this year when you're relying, and I think you've said similar things too, Reggie, if I've heard you in recent weeks, but when you're relying on two running backs that are approaching their 30s, obviously Chubb has the injury history that he's trying to come back from, and Mixon right now is not on the field. So I think there's still a lot of questions at that running back position. I think Woody Marks, you hope he can play a good role, but obviously he's still a question as a rookie. And Damian Pierce has some experience being with this organization, of course. I think he's a better fit for this system than what he had to deal with last year, so I think he can bring more to the table. And then also, you know, I was reading over the weekend Ben Solak talking about Stroud last year, saw so much too deep coverage, and the way to improve that's a better run game. So then you talk about the more importance of the run game this year. So all of this is to say I'm more concerned, I guess, right now about that running back room than, say, the linebackers or even the defense as a whole. So I go with Dameon Pierce because I think there's a great opportunity for him if he could get back out there.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thought. I was hoping that at some point here, sooner rather than later, he'd be able to get out there. Obviously, credit due to like Woody Marks and Jawar Jordan. I think that they've shown pretty damn well to this point in the previous nine practices that we've been able to get thus far in training camp 2025. But I mean, you have a rookie and a Jawar Jordan who is, I mean, a second year player that has not necessarily been at least he has not seemed highly regarded, at least in the places that the Texans have placed him. Right, he's been kind of a practice squad guy that's had the elevations and maybe had a little bit of run, although he has handled those opportunities well. I do wonder, and then, of course, you talk about this offseason where you add a Nick Chubb, you draft a Woody Marks, which would seem to indicate that at least the Texans have not, you know, valued him highly enough to believe that he absolutely will take a large swath of the snaps or what have you for running back. But those guys have practiced pretty well. I think that it remains to be seen what they look like in a game before we start talking about them in that space. And, yeah, I think the point ultimately is the only guy that has a level of experience at, you know, in what you're trying to do is Nick Chubb, who has injury issues. It's a question that remains there. I'm trying to fight the – I know that a decent amount of this is just kind of like anxiety-driven, rather, because you know Joe Mixon is a capable running back when he is ready, and it does seem like all indications are he will be ready for the season. I think that's still the kind of thought process to the point being. So I'm trying not to be too anxious about that. Something that seems like you're a little bit anxious about, Luke, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, it's the defense in a weird way, because the defense, I mean, they have shown to be incredible. They've clearly been the winners of camp to this point, as much as you can kind of view things in those terms. But you kind of seem to believe that there's a double-edged sword to this, right?
Yeah, I think so. For one, look, I do think the defense is going to be really good this year, top five, maybe top 10. But at the same time, when they're going up against this offense in training camp, I mean, do we have to take some of these results with a grain of salt? I think it's going to be a really good defense. But that's where the concern comes in. It's almost like in The Office, the Michael Scott Paper Company, when they visit their accountant, and Michael says, you know, it's our low prices that are keeping us in business. And the accountant says, no, it's actually your low prices that are putting you out of business. And it's when you think like this thing that is your greatest strength actually turns out to be somewhat of a weakness. And what I mean in that is a bit of a weakness for the team as a whole when it comes to the offense, where we keep getting these reports, and it looks like they ended Saturday. You were out there on Saturday. You know better than me. I was not there on Saturday. It seems like they ended practice on a little bit of a high note offensively, but they kept getting these stories in the press conference and the reports last week, and you guys were out there all week talking about it, just how defense keeps winning and this offense. You're trying to learn a new offense, and I think if nothing else, just for the mentality, it's almost like a jump shooter just needing to see the ball go through the net once or twice to get the psyche back, that when you are an offense that is trying to bounce back from last year and you're now trying to develop a new offense and you are just getting like curb stomped by your defense every day, and it's just like, man, you know, when are we going to see some of these improvements or see some of the things clicking with the offense to the point where Stroud, you know, threw his helmet Saturday before that good finish. And just that mentality of, it was already a tough year last year. You make the changes this offseason, and then you just keep getting beat up every time. Sometimes you just got to see the ball go through the net. Sometimes you need that small victory. I'm the youngest of three boys. I got beat up all the time. So, you know, when there was that one glimmer of hope where I got a small win, you start feeling a little good about yourself instead of just being beat down every day. And I think that could be important for this offense that's trying to turn the corner this year, learn a new system, to have some of those small victories instead of going up against this, to the compliments of this defense, this great defense every day where you feel like you just can't get anything done.
Sounds like you're pro call the dogs off to some degree, in a way that I think D'Amico kind of joked at in one of his availabilities last week. It might have been Friday, talking about how, you know, Will was getting too close to the quarterback too often. And yeah, look, I understand where you're coming from. I think it's kind of interesting, though, that you use the framework of, you know, being the youngest in a group of with like three, or just having older siblings, because I always think about it. Reminds me of, you know, when you see in sports, I always think about it in basketball terms, but I think it happens in other spaces as well, where you kind of have a group of brothers and it's like the youngest is the best that's coming because he's had to develop the tools and tricks in order to, you know, combat guys that are older and more developed than him that he's constantly playing against. I think that's the thought process. That's the watchword of competition that this Texans team has come up against. I do wonder if that's ultimately what happens in practice for this Texas team, because look, in theory, that would be good. I mean, if you want to be the level of offense or team just in general that you're hoping to be, you're going to need to face off against teams, defenses of the caliber, or at least similar to the caliber of the defense that this Texans team has, right? The Ravens are going to give you some struggle, some issues. I mean, the Bills, if they have their druthers, are going to give you some issues on defense. And we already have a decent amount of familiarity with Steve Spagnuolo's defense there in Kansas City. Like, these are tough things that you are combating against. And so if you find a way to figure out the tips and tricks now in order to deal with this kind of defense, you will better set yourself up for success. The question I have is not necessarily is the defense going too hard on them. Is does this offense, and particularly the line, have it within themselves to be able to compete against them in any circumstance, right? Like, is this offensive line talented enough to handle that? Because I think in some ways there's been admissions all the way through the offseason from this team that this offense is not as talented as maybe what others would have wanted. But the idea is, oh, well, the competition will raise the boats. The competition will make them better. Iron will sharpen iron in that way. But I'm wondering if we're starting to see some of the issues with kind of acquiescing and kind of letting up on the idea that off of the jump, we're not going to have a crazy amount of talent. And this is also where it kind of comes into play. I don't know that this is going to be a big deal. However, if you were listening to Training Camp Live with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris just a second ago, you will have heard them make mention of the idea that your presumed starting left tackle, Cam Robinson, you know, kind of went down in a play and kind of came off the field a little gimpy. Again, he walked off under his own power. It is practice. They are playing the car crash sport. These things will happen. But I think it reminds you again, even as you're starting to see a starting line coalesce, that if you have to get to depth, where are you also, right? Because of the, you know, seemingly lack of talent, at least the way I will say it, for the offensive line. So I don't know that I blame it on the defense, although I think, again, the defense being as good as they can, I think it gives you a good litmus test for what your offensive line is. And early on, even though, again, they're focusing on foundational pieces and making sure that their fundamentals are right, it keeps coming to mind to me, okay, do they have the high watermark capable within them of even being an adversarial foe for a defense of this caliber?
I'm with you 100%. You know, this defense is kind of like the donut on the baseball bat, where you use that because, you know, then you get up to the batter's box, it's then lighter to swing the bat. And so if you go up against this defense all training camp and throughout preseason, by the time you face some of the other defenses in the NFL, it'll feel like that lighter bat that you've been trained for, and an easier swing for the offense. But for me, it's just, and to your point, maybe it's better to find out the answers right away of like, oh, shoot, this offensive line isn't good enough. But for me, the whole thing is, while I agree with your point, it's just the fact of the beginning of the year. Like, I want to just ease in this offense first, and then you have all season to sharpen things against this really good defense. But give them some small victories early on so that you start feeling good right away and you have some of that momentum and encouragement, and then you get to continue to be, you know, get better as you go up against this defense throughout the regular season and throughout the rest of this month gearing up for week one. But it's just a tough start to use another cliche, you're just throwing them into the deep end here against this defense and seeing if they can swim. And more days than not, it seems like they've been sinking or drowning, unfortunately. And with the whole iron sharpens iron, I think it's a bit of a misnomer right now, because, you know, like in basketball, they always say, like, if you're the best player on the court, it's time to find a new court. And so the defense is really good, but when you are not being challenged enough by the offense, you know, that's another issue for me that I think, It's that double-edged sword of the defense. Again, really good. I'm not coming down on the defense, but how much are they being tested? And is the offense almost being too tested right now? And by the way, then they get the Vikings, which things, I know it's the preseason, but things may not be much easier when you go up against Brian Flores. And we saw what happened last year in that Vikings defense. Flores is a New England guy. Kevin O'Connell's a McVay guy. So they also have familiarity with maybe what the Texans want to do offensively. So it's just a tough start to this new offense for the Texans.
That's interesting. I'm not worried about the defense, and I hear what you're saying, like the iron sharpens iron. I think that they're very capable of handling their business. All of the baseline things that I would look at seem to be the same, right? Or seem to be in the place that would make me feel comfortable with what's happening with the defense. I think you're seeing kind of the fundamentals of the pass rushing still showing up. You're seeing secondary, including depth, kind of play their system, play their spots, not break the system, but still make plays on the football. All of that is what I want to see. Offensively, though, I think, again, has been the question for all of us, and it continues to be that. How does this particularly hit you? Because we mentioned Cam Robinson coming up a little gimpy. When he was out, for the moments that he was out, and I don't know that he is, if he has returned to play. However, when he was being out, they moved Juice Scruggs to right guard, who he's been getting a little work at right guard, both of the interior guard spots, in addition to obviously we know that he has played center in his time. Titus Howard moved to right tackle, and then Ariante Ursary moved to left tackle with that group. Not bringing in one of the other tackles that they move up. In fact, I remember Nick Cassero even mentioned when he was talking about tackles with Payne and Pendergast last week, he still mentioned that, hey, Titus can still slide out there. You see them doing that, going to that in this moment, instead of moving like a Blake Fisher into that spot, playing right tackle. Does that for you solidify what this starting offensive line is in circumstances with in the mindset, I imagine, of the Texans right now?
Yeah, I think it just tells us more about Blake Fisher. I think all of the actions since the end of last season have kind of told us all we need to know about Blake Fisher. And I know Lopez is really down on Blake, right? So I guess I can continue that sitting in this chair for him today. But my personal rule in football, people could tell me it doesn't matter, it's no difference. I like keeping guys at set positions, so I wouldn't like the idea of moving Titus Howard back and forth throughout the year. I want him to just have to be able to focus on that one position and be the stalwart and be the leader at that position on this offensive line. But I've also made it very clear on these airwaves that I'm not a big fan of Cam Robinson either, and that's not me rooting for any sort of injury or issue for him. I hope he's good to go, but I just don't think he's a very good left tackle in today's football. So just that iteration of the offensive line that you laid out, I honestly might like that better than what they've been running with, or better than having Cam at the left tackle. So
having the rookie Tay Ursary out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, I know it's asking a lot right away, but
offensive line for rookies, unless you're like the very, very upper echelon of rookies, is a steep learning curve jumping in the offensive line. You don't often see guys jump in and immediately make that level of impact. So you'd be asking a lot of Tay.
Yeah, I don't even think that was their plan to begin with. I don't think they planned for him to be the left tackle starting week one like that. I think the plan was to probably have Cam Robinson there and then kind of bring him on a little bit. But if that's the case, that's a big ask.
But do you guys anticipate him to be starting at one of the tackles week one, or do you still think it's Blake Fisher?
No, it definitely has felt like, yeah, as he is maintain that right tackle role in most of the, you know, first units that they've thrown out there at camp. And then today, again, with them moving him to left tackle as soon as Cam Robinson is not available, it seems very obvious that they're confident in him, that he is, you know, up there on your tackles. And I think this particular lineup that they threw out, again, the left tackle being Ursary, then Tomlinson, left guard, Jake Andrews at center, I think that they could go either way with him and Patterson. I don't know that they've settled in there. Right guard being Juice Scruggs sliding up with Titus Howard moving out. I think that gives us a big insight into the way that they're viewing their depth chart right now, as of right now. And it feels like the time where they're starting to build that, where, you know, your starting five, as we have previously seen, is what it is. And then when you look at beyond that, the guys that you view as tackles, you know, even Titus Howard moving out is probably higher than Blake. They're low on Blake. Juice Scruggs is probably who they're looking at as guard three, before you get to like Ed Ingram or maybe even like a Jalen Thomas who has been in there. This is kind of an idea of how they feel about their offensive line as you start figuring out who your 1 through 9 or 1 through 10 are. And I guess just to circle back around to where we started from, it doesn't give me a ton of confidence once, because again, you're not carrying 14 guys into the season. You're carrying your 10 or so, and you're going to have 8 of them active on a game day. And those are the guys that are going to need to go and protect C.J. Stroud and create holes and gaps for Nick Chubb and Joe Mixon. And as of right now, I'm still leaving. There's still something left to be desired for me.
No, I agree with you there. My point just being, though, if you're going to start Ursary on the offensive line anyways, for me, I don't care if it's right tackle or left tackle. I think it's a little different nowadays with the tackles. Maybe this is a hot take, I don't know, because the pass rushers move around enough, and especially if you have Cam Robinson and you have a rookie on the other end, you're probably going to focus on that rookie on the right side anyways. So just in regards to specifically that conversation of right tackle, left tackle, Ursary, if he's going to be one of your starting linemen in week one, I don't care if it's the right tackle or left tackle. That doesn't make a big difference to me anymore, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago when, sure, it was all about the left tackle. So if he's going to be out there, put him at either one, and it seems like he's going to be out there because, like I said, the actions, they just don't seem to be very high on Blake Fisher since the end of last year.
Yeah, that's the alarming part to me. It seemed like he jumped Blake Fisher by a couple feet, man. Like, it's not even a question that Blake Fisher possibly starting.
Which hopefully that portends good things for Ariante Ursary, right? Like, I think that that's, mm-hmm. that's good. And I hear what you're saying on the tackles. I think for me, actually, what that then pops out to is the secondary move of Titus out to right tackle and then having Juice Scruggs in there at guard, where I have one of the kind of things that I've held on to as a positive for this offensive line is the amount of size that they seemingly have put all the way across the line. Juice Scruggs having to come in and, you know, be in that space. And again, I want to acknowledge Cam Robinson catches a little knock here in practice. I don't think that this means that he is hurt and right. lost for a good amount of time. But I think just thinking through what that permutation would be, having Juice Scruggs at guard versus a bigger, more substantial Titus Howard, I think that that is something I'm not comfortable with, especially because we saw the effect of interior pressure on C.J. Stroud last year. And yeah. not to blame Juice Scruggs exclusively for that interior pressure, but I could easily see that being more prominent for him rather than the more sizable Titus Howard yeah. in that phone.
And this is very important, too, because this is pretty much their B team. So if one of the tackles was to get hurt, they're not going to Blake Fisher as the swing tackle type of guy. This is their B team, so they're taking Titus Howard. And
it's true.
So that when if Cam do get hurt during the season, now they're going to this. That might be the possibility.
That's a good point. Yeah, right. Speaks to maybe the lack of depth at the tackle position or just how low they are on Blake Fisher. Just to put a bow on all of it, the texts coming in have been mixed on my take with the offense versus defense. But I will highlight this one from the 832. If you're starting to learn to play piano, you wouldn't start by playing Mozart. I guess that was my point. You got to ease in with the new offense.
Well, and that's what Nick Haley has harped on, fundamentals, making sure that, you know, all mm-hmm. the fundamentals are right. And he sticks to that point. And so you got to hope that that is still where they're focusing on, is making sure that the fundamentals are right and that that ultimately shows up. We'll see what that looks like this weekend when we get to the Vikings. But before we get there, we got practice all week long, and Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne are both out there, and Sean out there courtesy of Flight by Yuengling. We'll talk to him at 12:40. Coming up next, though, let's talk a little bit about these Astros, where another weekend sweep, unfortunately, in Boston. Let's talk a little bit about the additions, though, because we got a chance to see all of the additions over the weekend, and maybe some of them that we're still hoping to see coming. Which of the additions, whether from trade or injury, will have the biggest impact for this Astros team going forward? 713-572-4610. Let's talk about it next. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Astros. They are swept on the road in at Fenway this weekend. They lose a combined 15-5 over the weekend.
Sheesh.
Yeah, not what you want. Not what you want in fundamental baseball. We were talking about fundamentals. Fundamental baseball got away from the Astros.
It was out here looking like the Rangers, man.
All right. I mean, yeah, but like, all right.
Looking like the Yankees, really. Kind
yeah,
of
the
boy,
Yankees
that
too.
Is a good point.
Yeah.
The Yankees
oh
have been
gosh.
Bad this year.
Man.
In that way, like mistakes yeah. ways, which we don't have to get into that. The question ultimately, though, 713-572-4610, let's focus on some of the good, hopefully, here. Which of the additions, reinforcements of sorts, whether it's via trade, the three guys that you brought in at the deadline, or, you know, coming back off of the injured list, do you anticipate making the biggest splash with the Astros, making the biggest impact over the remainder of the season? Because we're starting to see some. Obviously, we saw Correa back in that number one jersey, mm-hmm. Manning the hot corner for two of the three games. You saw Jesus Sanchez handling some outfield work. And then you even got Ramon Urias at one point mm-hmm. in this. But then also we know that Spencer Arrighetti should be handling one of the outings this week. Obviously, not tonight, but at some point in this three-game set versus the Marlins, you will see Spencer Arrighetti returning. You know, soon thereafter, we should see the likes of Christian Javier, Luis Garcia. Which of those guys, or maybe you have another name that you'd like to throw in there, are you anticipating to make the biggest impact for the Astros moving forward?
Yeah, it's tough. First of all, this weekend, you have the trade deadline. Everyone was so excited for Carlos Correa's return, and I get it. Although, Reggie, I think you were more in line with how I would feel of tempering those that it's really just nostalgia. I don't know how much Correa really, you know, is going to help the team. But everywhere else, it's been a love fest, and then you go out and you get swept by the Red Sox. It was like, to reference a terrible movie that you should never watch, the final Jaws they did, Jaws the Revenge, where the Brody family moves to the Bahamas to get away from the sharks, and then they find sharks in the Bahamas.
What?
I know,
there
it's unbelievable.
Are sharks in the Bahamas?
What? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
But they thought they solved their problems. Like, ah, oh, finally, we're going to get away and be happy. And everyone was so happy for Cray. And then you go out, you get swept. It was just a bittersweet reminder over the weekend. But
especially when he has a couple of shots going dead center and just warning track power that don't get out. Now, of course, you did get the home run, which is fun. But a few of those where it's like, oh, is the power there?
Yeah, he hit the ball pretty well over the weekend, as did, of course, Christian Walker. But to answer the question at hand here, I've been leaning pitching all along. Now, the lineup did not look, or the offense did not look that great this weekend. You mentioned just what the five runs scored, and it was really a boom or bust with the homers, runners in scoring position. They've been terrible during this bad, you know, this downstretch hitting under the Mendoza line in those scenarios. But I've always said pitching, I think you still, if you want to win in the playoffs or at this point just even get to the playoffs, I think you still need at least that third arm in the rotation behind Hunter Brown and Fromber. So I don't know who exactly that pitcher is going to be because I wanted them to add someone at the deadline. My concern is banking on these guys coming back. There was kind of that thought last year with Justin Verlander of just like, hey, wait till we get Verlander back second half of the season. And then he was terrible. And you had to get Kikuchi at the deadline, and Kikuchi was really the big addition for that pitching staff. And I thought it was going to be something similar. They did not bring in that player. So it's going to have to be one of the returning pitchers, but you know, you're going to rely on guys who haven't pitched in a while. Arrigetti is going back to the first weeks of the season. You're going to rely on somebody. Lance McCullers can't stay healthy. You're going to rely on someone else who hasn't pitched in more than 25 months. You know, Walker Buehler, who just pitched against the Astros this weekend, the Dodgers were hoping, hey, when he returns last year, you know, we're going to get Walker Buehler back in this rotation. And then he pitched like a 5 ERA because it's just hard to count on pitchers coming back from injuries. But with that said, I think it has to be somebody on that pitching staff because to me, as bad of a weekend as this might have been offensively, I still lean towards needing more starting pitching than even more lineup help. You know, now that you have Correa, Sanchez, Pena's back, I still think that the starting pitching needs more depth and more strength.
You laid out exactly my same thought process in this space, and that's why I think you made a fantastic selection here when you talk about the starting pitching. I hope I'm not showing too much my bias here. No, I think you're right. Like, as much as I think that Carlos Correa will be very helpful, defensively, we already saw some of the awkwardness that he has defensively. This is not the gold glove Correa of old. Hopefully, working with Paris Chica will help some of that. Although, did you see that weird send with Sanchez that he had? Where it's just like, I don't understand why Paris Chica sent him at all.
No.
We know him to be a very good like fielding coach, and I think that that should hopefully help Correa get better defensively. But you're right. I think that we're seeing the quad A pitchers, as I've called them, who have, you know, really pitched admirably for this Astros team. We're starting seeing them start to lose a little gas. In fact, you know, I'm not even going to say the other thing that I'm thinking about, but when you talk about Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez, even they're not as, you know, dominant as they had been prior. That third pitcher, or just getting better pitching, helping support your bullpen a little bit, and then also, again, making it so that your, you know, timely offense, if not a robust offense, can be useful, you know, and not giving up four runs. And of course, I understand that's kind of unfair to ask them, hey, keep it to one or two every game. But that's kind of what's necessary for this offense, because I don't know that this offense is going to blow up Shuaite in a way to give you that run support. I think it's going to need to be one of these pitchers. And I was going to say Arrigetti, who you should see, because like you're talking about, these other pitchers, Garcia, Javier, even hopefully France in the future. If those guys come back, they have not pitched this season. They have not pitched for a while. At least Arrigetti had pitched this season. True. And I was like, and he'd been good. Not that much. Like, he only has two outings, but even that is more to lean on. Plus, you know, you kind of had the freak accident. Whereas I feel like maybe it'll be easier for him to get back into the zone of being a better pitcher, one that you can depend on to go out there and be well. Like, that's what I would lean upon. But I think it highlights, again, they are really depending on reinforcements in a way. And it's a real cross the fingers type of situation for the Astros.
Yeah, I think you've convinced me of Eric. If I had to settle on one pitcher in particular, I think Arrigetti, because like you said, he has the shorter layoff of these other guys, and we saw what he did down the stretch last year. So, but yeah, because I'm looking ahead towards October now. I know that lead shrinking in the division, and maybe Astro fans are worried about some teams behind them in the West. But
thankfully, the Mariners and the Rangers split that series, or not split it, but at least nobody swept on one side or the other.
Yeah, they beat up on each other and bought you a little bit of a buffer with that sweep over the weekend. So, but yeah, I mean, Correa will be big in the postseason for his clutchness, but like you said, I mean, who's starting game 3 right now? Who's starting game 4? And then you have Hunter Brown, your ace, who has not been good on regular rest in his career. They always give him extra rest, and you know, so you're not going to be able to get him for three games in a seven-game series. So you're going to need probably four starters in a playoff series. I think they only have two right now. You can figure some things out that lineup, but you need more pitching. And I'm still of the school of thought that even in modern baseball, pitching is still what pitching and defense still wins in October. And so that's why I resort to pitching.
All right, so if you did not go there, it's got to be Carlos Correa, right? It has to be him when you talk about, obviously, leadership, but then swinging the bat, which, to be fair, and I think this is where both of our, I guess, skepticism, for lack of a better term, has been for the Correa, reunion is the word that I was looking for there. He's been inconsistent, to say the least, offensively this year with the Twins. Hopefully the familiar confines of now Daikin Park, once Minute Maid Park, helps him get back to that space. But, I mean, he's still going to be the closest to – he's going to be an everyday guy. I know Sanchez also being a left-handed bat will be useful. Mm-hmm. But it feels like Correa is situated to probably be a bigger deal of importance to your offense, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, you could say – you could probably have an argument for that lineup of Correa, or if and when Yordan ever comes back, you know, who will be the bigger boost in the lineup. But – Correa, even with the Twins, I mean, he didn't have the best seasons with the Twins, but the one year they made the playoffs, he hit like 400 in the playoffs for the Twins. He's just a clutch guy in those big moments in the playoffs, especially for a franchise like the Twins that are so bad in the postseason. It didn't rub off on him. So I think for the leadership and for what he can provide, assuming they get to October, that's where he'll be the big addition. He's not the same guy he was when he left Houston, which was part of my issue with the trade. It seemed like everyone thought we're getting Correa back from, you know, 5 years ago. His metrics are not good this year. He hasn't been very good in Minnesota. He's been a really bad fielder. So you're not getting the same guy. I always say it's the pet cemetery, you know, theory, if you will, where you want your pets. Wouldn't it be great if our pets could come back? And then they come back and they haunt the town. It's like, oh, this is not the same pet I remember. This is not so fun. And it's similar at Correa. Like, it'd be great if this was the 2020 Carlos Correa, but that's not what you're getting. He's not the same guy. However, with that said, come playoff time, you hope that that clutchness will play a big role, assuming the Astros get there.
Yeah. Well, you talk about, you know, a pitcher that you probably could have had at the deadline. Sandy Alcantara is the man who is going for the Marlins tonight in Miami. Actually, I say tonight, it's 5:40 first pitch, so it's going to feel, the sun's still going to be up and everything. It'll be Jason Alexander going for the Astros before they figure out who's going tomorrow. And it seems like the possible starter on Wednesday is Hunter Brown, so that would, in theory, slay Arrigetti into Tuesday. But again, we'll see what is officially situated for the Astros. Hopefully they can get back to winning ways, because losing 8 out of the last 10 is no bueno, obviously, and it very much is bad, because only a 2.5 game lead over the Mariners at this point.
Yeah, and you looked at this series with the Marlins thinking like, oh, this is going to be one of the easier series they have in this month, and now the Marlins are playing really good baseball, just swept the Yankees for, I think, the first time ever, the first time in like 15 years. And the Astros, meanwhile, are, what, 7-15, something like that, since that Dodgers series. So it looks a little tougher now, this Marlins series, than you probably would have thought 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get a little takey, because I got a hating-ass Luke in the building. I say that with all love, mind you. So our question of the day, what's an unpopular take that would get you booed? Because there was a lot of booing out there at MetLife Stadium this weekend for SummerSlam. We'll talk about it next. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Let's get to our question of the day, inspired by Tyrese Halliburton going out there to New York and antagonizing the New Yorkers. What's your unpopular take that would get you booed? 713-572-4610, because you're not a Rask guy, are you?
Of the 90s. Yeah,
okay.
I grew up on it. But
as much,
no, I don't
as,
watch
much
it
as any red-blooded American male is a wrestling
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, I watched it, and I did a couple of choke slams in my day when I was 12 years old, and then maybe not so much. Shout out to the people who still do it, because they are rabid, and they were out there for, what was it, a two-day event now?
Yeah, that's what it's become in all these.
Yeah, it seemed like all these pay-per-view events are two-day, three, just weekend events now.
That's right.
It was one night back in my day.
I know it.
You might get a good three-hour event.
At least now, though, like, I do have WWE Network just for the nostalgia. At least now, like, back then, that was a big deal. We try to convince our parents, can we get the pay-per-view, and it'd be like $60? At least now, like, you can watch these for free if you do subscribe to, like, the WWE Network or Peacock. So I will grant you that.
They really got us, don't they? Yeah. You said you can watch for free if you subscribe.
Yeah, I know.
Mean?
Well, it's you're paying it anyways. It comes with the office and everything else you get to watch. It's thrown in there.
Yeah, if you got Peacock, You can. I think you can watch it for free, right?
Yeah, if
you
got Peacock. And Peacock, they just upped their prices by like 40%, so that's a whole other thing.
How about that free, baby?
Yeah.
How about that free? Anyways, send those in. I'm a
sucker.
But yeah, Tyrese Halliburton was out at MetLife Stadium where they were having SummerSlam, WWE was. And if you'll remember, he was really antagonizing the New York Knicks fans in the Eastern Conference playoffs this past playoff season. And I guess they don't like him, which I get it. So they showed him up on the video board at MetLife Stadium. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of New Yorkers there. This is what they had to give to Tyrese Halliburton.
The two-time All-Star Tyrese Halliburton just underwent successful surgery for a torn Achilles tendon. Said he would not miss the opportunity to be here in the front row tonight.
Kaboo. Kaboos. And I got me thinking, like, what would get you booed like that? What's your take that'd get you booed like that? I do wonder if the one that I was talking about with you, the one that I, you know, talked with Lopez about last week would get me booed in the idea that low-level football is the worst sport to watch at that level. Because I'll take lower-level basketball, lower-level baseball. Then once you don't have a quarterback of the, you know, what, top 25 status, once you're talking about, like, with all due respect, UFL, I mean, they abandoned Houston anyways, right? So there's no longer going to be a Houston Roughnecks next year in the UFL. So they abandoned Houston anyways. I think I can talk crazy about them. I'm not watching UFL football over watching like lower level basketball. I think that one would give me booed. I think people especially love football in any iteration to a point where they will watch any version of football, whether or not it's actually good.
Yeah, probably, because I'm not with you on that. I would rather watch preseason. I don't watch spring football, but I will watch preseason football over like the summer league. And having watched or worked in minor league sports before, even refereeing over the years, like, I don't know, low-level basketball, even some low-level baseball when a guy can't throw it over the plate, I think there's a lot worse watches than maybe preseason football. But that could get you booed, especially maybe in this state. For me, I don't know. This is a great question. I was thinking about it. I mean, you could probably go back through the podcast of when I've been on the air in recent months and find plenty of examples of unpopular opinions. I would tell you, you said a turn of phrase earlier before we came on the air, and it sort of reminded me. I've had this argument with friends for years. We've done polls at weddings. Everyone seems to disagree with me. I know what the expression is, which is play it by ear. I intentionally say it wrong because it makes more sense if it was play it by ear. I don't know if it's going to get me booed because it's a grammar thing. I don't know if people care enough to boo on an expression, but I've had drag down arguments for years on this. It should be play it by ear, and that's how I say it because it makes more sense.
Y-E-A-R?
Y-E-A-R, yeah.
Yeah, why did that make more sense?
Because you're giving it, when people use that phrase, they're talking typically more about time. They're not waiting to hear something. We're going to play it by ear. Typically, it's like, oh, let's see how things play out. Let's give
what
it a few days.
What do you think you're playing here?
Huh?
In the expression, in this metaphor of sorts, what do you think that you are playing?
I don't know, but you're giving it time before you make a decision. It's like, hey, you want to go to the movies this weekend? We'll play it by ear because you're giving it more time to see. I got to wait to see how I feel this weekend. Instead of ear, you're not waiting to hear anything. You're not going to sight read any music here. What is play it by ear? You're not sight reading any music to decide if you want to go to the movies this weekend or not.
I love this so much.
I love
man.
It so much.
Play it by ear. You're welcome. Start
play
using it.
Play it by ear. This is the funny thing is, I think if you say that, people might not even notice that you're saying ear.
No, they don't.
But in your mind, you're like, I'm right right now.
Absolutely. And by the way, the stupid iPhone autocorrect. Every time I try to type play it by ear, they always autocorrect to ear. And I keep going back and forth. Ear, 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 ear. Drives me nuts. Change that.
This is so delightfully dumb. I love it. Somebody said, Jacob on the YouTube said, there's used to be that the Astrodome sucks and needs to be torn down, but now you wouldn't get booed by it. Yeah, no, I think a lot of people have come around to that thought process there. Fig, do you have one that you would get booed behind?
Yeah, and I said this a couple times during the, I guess, the duration of this show, just as long as I've been on the air. Mexican food is towards the bottom of my list whenever I'm thinking about going somewhere to get something to eat. Yeah.
Big booze.
Yeah. Boo me all y'all want. Boo me all y'all. No, I'm just playing. But yeah, I got a lot more foods I go to before I get to Mexican food. It's not bad, but I would go to Japanese food. I would go to Chinese food. I would go to Korean barbecue, Japanese barbecue, American food, Italian. I got this whole list before I get the Mexican food.
Whew.
So that's a tough one for me.
Yeah, it's
man.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're definitely getting booed behind that one. From the 281, unpopular opinion, Texas high school football is a more watchable product than 80% of college football. That's a lot of college football that we're
looking at. That's a high percentage.
I mean, that's big ups to Texas football or Texas sports and all that stuff, but man, I don't know if I watched that over college.
No, maybe like Division III. Are we talking all college football? Like
they said, 80% of college football. Which
nah,
I mean, yeah. Look,
no, I can't do that.
Even if you're getting Division III in there, you're clipping off a decent amount of. I am interested in this. How many people would boo that? Because it does feel like, especially as the sport of college football has become more national and less regional, people are probably only consuming more than anything. Just the upper echelons, just like kind of the SEC game of the day, and then you know whoever the top 25 is. If it doesn't have a number next to the name, there's a low likelihood, I think, of people watching it comparatively. I do think that maybe we are seeing people watch a lot less of that 80% of college football.
Yeah, I think so. But I would also compare it. Like, obviously, the football is great here, but it's always like the conversation people have of, can this college team beat this NFL team? And it's like, well, the NFL team's made up of all pros, where the college team has some. And I think it's similar, where as good as the football is here, you know, if you're talking about Division I football, those are all guys that can play Division I football. And that might not equal a better viewing product, but I think just the talent, as we were talking earlier about the importance of having good talent to make football enjoyable, the talent, obviously, it would be superior at the college level. So, I don't know what I would put that percentage at, but it certainly wouldn't be 80%.
Some other opinions coming in that they would get booed. From Marcus on the YouTube, get booed because I think Tim Duncan should be ranked higher than Kobe. I 1,000% agree with that, actually. And I will not be taking any questions at this point because Kobe fans,
yeah,
they're different. I'll just say that. In fact, I will go further. Like, if I really think about it, I don't believe that there was a point in time where Kobe was the single best player in the league. Yeah, bring that in.
Yeah.
That's not to say I don't think he's one of the greatest players of all time. If you think about it, things just kind of hit at the wrong times for him to be the single best player in the league. However, and people aren't trying to hear that.
Yeah, of course. People ain't trying to hear that. Yeah. They're trying to put him top three.
I know. I think.
Which, no.
I know. It's almost like a lot of times where people pass away and then, like, their music, they sell more music afterwards. And we just romanticize people after their passing. And I think the Kobe talk nowadays has really gone, the pendulum has maybe swung too far in a certain direction. He was a great player, of course, but yeah, some people have some crazy conversations about him.
Yeah. Keep those coming in, the various things, opinions that would get you booed, because shout out to Tyrese Halliburton. Definitely took his fair share of boos, but he enjoyed it. Like, he actually got on social media afterwards, took the video, quote tweeted and said, "Miss y'all too, New York," with the orange and blue emoji, heart emojis. He's like, leaning into his villain era.
Yeah, which he should do. It's perfect for wrestling, and it's good for, it's even good for the NBA and good for him. I like it. It used to be Trae Young there in New York. Now Tyrese Halliburton's public enemy number one. You know, at our steak night, we were doing like most overrated, underrated, whatever it was. Figgy, you said Bruce Springsteen is overrated for musicians.
Yeah.
That might get you booed.
Yeah.
At least among sports writers, 100%.
Yeah.
Or anybody from New Jersey. but I think Forrest Gump is a very overrated movie. Everyone seems to love that movie. Maybe that'd get me booed, but Forrest Gump to me is one of the more overrated films.
Ooh, okay. Now, when you start talking about pop culture, you get into some real good overrated or underrated type things that would really get you into trouble. Like our guy, B. Scott, who, again, I will remind you, he thinks that John Wick was a waste of his time. I am still amazed by that take.
That's the part I don't like. I don't like the waste of my time thing. It'd be one thing if he said, it was all right. It wasn't that big of a deal. I don't need to see two or three or four. But a waste of your time.
He thought it was a waste of his time. Somebody said 3-4-6 will get booed because they think Jeter was overrated. Oh, I'm with you.
Me too.
I'm with you there.
Yeah.
Like, I never gave him... All right, real quick. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to run and hide as soon as we say it. I think he should have given up shortstop when A-Rod came through.
Wow.
Right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610.
Good thing we ain't in New York.
Appreciate you rocking with us. Coming up next, let's go around the NFL, including, are Browns fans sick for this thing that they're doing? We'll do it next.